Hello friends, welcome to the third installment in our series on meditation and centering prayer, specifically the method that we're learning to meditation. This is the second group session, and last week we covered the basics to get people going. We explained how you choose a sacred word as a symbol of your intention to consent to God's presence and his action in your heart. You say your sacred word in your mind to start off the time, and then you wait and you try not to think. And when you get distracted by thoughts, you return to that prayer by saying your sacred word. And that's really all the method is. But obviously there's a lot of depth to it, and there's a lot that happens, and we're going to be covering all of that in the weeks to come. But today we're going to be talking about intention and consent, and what those really mean and how those work. Because that's what that prayer is that the sacred word means. It's consenting to God. It's saying yes to him. And it's also intention. So let's look more deeply into those two things, consent and intention, which are at the heart of centering prayer. Consent is basically saying yes. And yes to what? Well, it's yes to God. It's yes to God's presence and his action in your life. We spent a bit of time on this last week and said that, you know, even the best of us, in the sense of who know God best, still have a very poor, dull image of how awesome and how magnificent and how wonderful he really is. And many of us and many out there have a very poor image of God, an image that's maybe been created by hypocritical people, by a bad father, by disappointments that you've been through in life. I joked about how many see this gray-bearded man with angry eyes and a big stick ready to zap you, and who live with guilt and somehow put that onto, well, that's what God is, someone who makes me feel guilty. Well, that's not the truth. That's not, you know, that's just a deceptive, contorted view. God is love. God is the ultimate goodness. Everything sweet is just a tiny reflection of God. Any joy and pleasure is in this life, in this universe, is really just a hint of him, the ultimate reality. And that's what the consent is. That's why this meditation is so awesome, because you're saying yes to that. You're saying yes to a true, real experience of what God really is. And so this is part of going on a journey to discover God, to at a deep level, beyond thoughts, to know him. And that's what the consent is. It's saying yes to that knowledge. It's saying yes to his presence. I love Revelations chapter 3, verse 20 in the Bible. The Christ, the post-incarnate Christ, the resurrected Christ, says this. He says, "I stand at the door and I knock. And if any man hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in to him and I'll eat with him." And in those days, eating with someone showed deep friendship, acceptance. It was almost a family thing. And that's what Christ says to every human being. He says, "If you open the door, I will come in." And boy, oh boy, we've hardly even grasped what that means for him to come in. But consent is just saying yes to that, and then waiting to see what happens. And that's why this is so awesome and so exciting and so transformative. And if you think about it, that's all you can actually do towards God is consent. You can try and do stuff for him, but he doesn't need you to do anything for him because he has everything. There's actually only one thing God needs of us, and that is for us to let him love us. And that's what the consent is. So that's what your sacred word really means. It's saying yes. And then it's also intention. So it's consent and intention. And it's often been said that centering prayer, this meditation practice, is not about attention, it's about intention. And in that way, it's very different from many meditational practices. And I'm going to give you a little show you a little diagram here that I've drawn, which is a framework that you could put all meditational methods that exist. And if you start researching meditation, this is pretty much the categorization that you get to. So it's a matrix. And on the y-axis, you've got two broad types. You've got faith-based meditation and non-faith-based meditation. There's a lot of meditation out there that's purely seen as a neurological exercise. And there's a lot of merit to that because it seriously is very good for your brain. I think I said in the first session that it's shown that you emit beta waves and a different part of your brain's working, and you really need that part of your brain to engage. But this type of meditation, in essence, doesn't acknowledge a level which is the spiritual realm. And you know, faith-based methods maintain, well, certainly the Christian one maintains, that there is a spiritual part of us. And when we meditate, we connect with God, we're engaging that spiritual part of us. And the non-faith methods really just say, well, that's just a different part of your brain. And then this is a very interesting matrix. On the X side, you've got concentrative methods and you've got non-directive methods. Now, here's what's fascinating is we sit right up here with centering prayer. It's obviously a faith-based method. It's targeted at God and the Christian faith. And over here, it's a non-directive method. And that's where this intention versus attention comes in. Because the concentrative methods of meditation, whether they're faith-based or not, try to use the mind to slow down the mind. So they try to pay attention to something specific so that the mind doesn't wander off, and in that way, to give the mind a rest. So examples of that could be a mantra, just repeating a word again and again. And that's absolutely not what we're doing. That's not, the sacred word is not a mantra. It's not something that you're repeating and repeating and repeating so that your brain doesn't have the opportunity to think about other stuff. Rather, it's non-directive. Now, if concentrated methods try to use the brain to focus on just one thing, to pay attention so that the brain doesn't stray, non-directive methods try to go to a different part of us in the context of centering prayer. That different part of us is our hearts, it's our spirits, and to go there. And then just to let the mind do whatever it likes. But in a sense, you've changed, you've pushed a switch to say heart on. And so now your heart, your spirit man, your that part of you that's so massive gets to engage, gets to be, gets prime time. And God moves there. And your mind is a perpetual motion machine. It's thinking and But it's not in gear, if that makes sense. It's almost like your gear is here, not over here in the mind. And because of that, there's actually tremendous benefits to this method. In fact, the general research shows that the neurological benefits are much greater from the non-directive forms of meditation. And so that's basically what we're doing here. So coming back to it now, just thought I'd share that broad categorization of meditation types. Basically, you're in the top right quadrant, so you're in the very best one you can get. It's intention to be in the heart that is the key to this prayer, not the need to pay attention to not thinking. And that's a crucial distinction. So what is intention? Well, it's intention to consent. Everything we said about consent, saying yes to God. It's intending. And here's something amazing. I didn't realize this, but intention is an action of the will. It's an action of the heart. And it's a modern word for faith. Intention is faith. When you make a decision towards God, that's faith. I misunderstood faith for such a long time. I thought faith is this mysterious force that comes on you and then you can do stuff. Or I thought faith is a special gift that a few have. Both of those are wrong. Faith isn't some mysterious force. Faith is a choice. Faith is an action. Faith is saying yes when you know God is offering something. That's what faith is. And so intention to say yes is what faith is. And it's not just for a select few. The Apostle Paul said, St. Paul said, that each of us has been given a measure of faith. So every human being has the ability to say yes, to consent to God at the level of the heart. And so faith is like taking a plunge into a swimming pool. It's like, and then just doing it. And that's what you're doing with your sacred word. That's what you're saying towards God. And so that hopefully will be helpful. Thomas Keating says this. I love how he puts it, and I've remembered this phrase so often. He says, you have your time of centering prayer, and when your intention gets fuzzy, you repeat your sacred word to solidify your intention, to remind, to restate in your heart that you hear for God's presence and his action. The Cloud of Unknowing, that wonderful 14th century mystical classic that was anonymously written but is just an absolute gem, uses the phrase of God will be known through the cloud of unknowing by an act of naked intent towards God. So that's what the sacred word is. It's naked, meaning it's raw, it's from the deepest part of you, and it's yes. It's yes. It's like, I can't make any of this happen. I can't know you by myself. I can't conjure up thoughts and then think that that's God. But I could say yes at the deepest part of me, and then I get to know you. So I'll give you one more analogy. Of this intent, Thomas Keating speaks about thinking about God as a huge, powerful river, and centering prayer as being a choice you make to sit in the bottom of that river. Imagine that you can breathe in this very special kind of water of God, and you choose to immerse yourself in this river, to sit right at the bottom of it, and just to soak it up for 20 minutes. That's what you're doing with centering prayer. And then what happens is you look up at the surface of the river and you notice that there are boats floating along the surface. And those boats are your thoughts. And they're not in the river. They're at a very surface level. They're on the river and they're going past. And what happens, and it's going to happen 1,000, 10,000 times to you, is you tend to get into those boats. You tend to get up, forget your intent to be right at the bottom of the river, soaking it up. You forget that, and you get up into the boat that says, what's for supper? I'm hungry. And then you start floating down the river. Man, I might cook this. I might go to that restaurant. And then you realize, whoa, hold on, I'm not in the river anymore. And you say, you repeat your intent, which is, I want to be in the river of God. And you get out of your boat and you come back down. And so that bottom of the river is your spirit, it's your heart, it's that place where you're connecting with God. And your mind, the perpetual motion machine, is boats going past. And your job is not to stop the boats. The boats are there. Your brain, as I said, is a perpetual motion machine. You're going to have thoughts, but it's to try not engage in those thoughts. Try not to get into the boats. But, and this I want to stress, we need to be so gentle with ourselves in this practice. When you found, and I sometimes think, gosh, I got in a boat for the last 5 minutes and I've been thinking about something. At first, I was upset with myself, saying, oh, Rob, you're not doing this right. This is, you're bad at this. And getting myself worked up and frustrated. And that's absolutely not what God expects. And it's not the way you should treat yourself. You should treat yourself gently and kindly and just say, oh, there you go again. I got in a boat. Let me get out of the boat because this is my intent. And it's a gentle, kind, loving thing. I want to read you something that Cynthia Bourgault wrote. She writes some great books on centering prayer and meditation. She says, the deal is this. If you catch yourself thinking, you let the thought go. So you make a deal with yourself. My deal is not that I'm not going to think. It's impossible to do that. You have to do a whole different type of meditational practice, which is the concentrative methods, which are actually less effective because you're using the brain to quieten the brain. All you're saying is I'm going to think, but my deal is if I catch myself thinking, then I'm going to return to the sacred word. I'm going to let the thought go. So she goes on. It's as simple as that. You're not responsible for the thoughts you don't catch, she says. And then she says, at least not at first. I'll offer some refinements to this instruction a bit later. And you don't need to torment yourself with the question of who or what catches itself thinking. Just deal with what's on your plate, which will be more than enough to keep you busy. If you find yourself tangled with a thought, no matter what kind of thought, you simply, gently let that thought go. You release it, thus bringing yourself back into the alignment with your original intention, which was to maintain that bare, formless openness to God. Of course, the next thought might be right back, reducing the duration of your bare, formless openness to a nanosecond. No problem. Just let that thought go as well. The essence of this method lies in the prompt releasing of thoughts, not in stopping them from arising in the first place. So that's today. Let's practice that for the next week.